Kingdom Hearts. I don't know. I feel like every third person I talk to has had some sort of experience with that franchise. It's
could be
it's
good, could be bad.
Sometimes
they know about it.
Right. It's just one of those franchises that should work because it has all the pieces together. It's got a good game engine. It's got characters from another IP, from another medium. And it just really makes a nice cake with all those ingredients. Did you play Kingdom Hearts 3? And if you did, what are your thoughts? Cool. Ayo, welcome to another edition of the Streamcast. I am Blackamora, and we have been talking with so many distinguished people in and around the gaming industry, whether that's directors, whether that's players, superstar streamers, and that doesn't stop today because we've got a very special guest on this episode for you. Please join me in welcoming the player that puts professional in pro player in every sense of the word, Robin.
Hey, hello. That's a very nice introduction.
Thank you. I've been practicing. How are you doing, Robin?
Doing good. Just coming off of the high of attending the Tekken World Tour finals. But I'm back in London now, getting used to real life. It's an adjustment.
Getting used to that cold. Well, I mean, you're obviously a big Tekken player. That's kind of how we met the first time. We met back in, was it 2019?
Your guess is as good as mine. Probably. Possibly.
The last full year of going outside before lockdown. For anyone who doesn't know who you are, what you do, would you like to give them a little bit of a synopsis?
Yeah, sure. So I am, well, I'll go by Robin. That's not my real name. That's fine. I don't need to know.
Robin is your real name. You're named after the Teen Titan, obviously.
Of course. Oh, man. So I'm me. I guess my day job, I am in the game industry. I work as a game developer, specifically as an ESTET or an automation engineer, whatever you want to call it. And then around the side of that, I'm very big into my fighting games. Well, I say fighting games. I should say Tekken, really. I'm very big into Tekken. So I'm part of a group called East London Fighters, where we put on a lot of events, local tournaments and stuff for the community to get involved in. Been doing both of those for like 4 or 5 years. And yeah, I stream occasionally. That's it.
So that's streaming. You're in the industry, pro player.
Pro player.
You got to part of a team. So we'll take it all the way back because I feel like with gamers, there's often an origin story, kind of like superheroes. In some cases, like mine, supervillains. Let's get into your origin story. Do you remember your first ever game and console?
That's a good question. So I'd say this is a tricky one because it's sort of like I grew up watching my older brother and my older sister play games a lot. I think that's sort of what indoctrinated me into the medium. But like my first ever game, so I remember my mum bought me the PS2 when it came out. Like that was my console. So that is highly cherished. The first ever game, I think it wasn't actually a game for me. It was either like Grand Theft Auto or like The Getaway, which was like both 18 rated and I was like 11. But my mom didn't know. It's just like, it came as a bundle. You know, there was no memory cards. So I was just playing the first level over and over again. I was like, all right, I need to get this sorted. I remember seeing the like trailers for Kingdom Hearts 2 at the time. I was like, I need this game in my life. So I got that and the rest is history.
Oh, sick. I remember The Getaway as well. Very good game. I really want them to remaster it, remake, whatever the term is. Bring that back. Mm-hmm. I need that.
I'll complete it this time if they bring it back. Yeah.
I'll get that memory card too. Oh, that brings me back to like playing games in the 90s and noughties as well. Not having memory cards. you either finish the game in one sitting, or what just... happens more often, you play that one level and you master that one level. do you remember the game that was the turning point for you that really got you thinking, I think I can do this for the rest of my life?
Don't know. I guess it's like there's a couple of different points. I say like the initial sort of like game was like, I have like very fond memories of watching my brother and my sister again. Shout outs to them. Playing through Donkey Kong Country on the Super Nintendo. Like, wow. It's just like that whole game was just like etched in my memory. Yeah, I don't know. I feel like that sort of sparked something. Just like, oh my God, this is like amazing. And then, yeah, when I got my own console for myself, PS2, it was definitely, I think Kingdom Hearts 2 was a big one for me. Funny aside from that, I actually played it out of order because I didn't know. I was like, it's Kingdom Hearts 2 yet? What's going on? Who is this blonde guy? Like, where's this? I was so confused. It's fine. We've played through all the games now. We're up to speed. But yeah, so that's a big one. And what else? There's like so many I could rattle off, but I think I'll stick with those two. It's like defining sort of memories and moments for me.
And those are very strong answers, because I think those games resonate with a lot of gamers, regardless of whether they watched it through, you know, a sibling like you did, or they played it themselves. I think those games kind of push the boundaries of what we understood the capabilities of a game being. So yeah, I can definitely see it with those two. Kingdom Hearts, I don't know. I feel like every third person I talk to has had some sort of experience with that franchise. It could be good, could be bad.
Sometimes they know about it.
Right. It's just one of those franchises that should work, because it has all the pieces together. It's got a good game engine. It's got characters from another IP, from another medium. And it just really makes a nice cake with all those ingredients. Did you play Kingdom Hearts 3? And if you did, what are your thoughts? Cool.
wait. I need to compose myself. Okay, so I did play Kingdom Hearts 3. And obviously, anyone who knows anything about the franchise will know, like, people who play Kingdom Hearts 2 at launch or thereabouts had a very, very, very long wait for Kingdom Hearts 3. We finally got it. There was a lot of anticipation. I had full-on tears when I had the box in my hand. Oh, wow. Put it into the console, played through the first couple of hours, like, okay, yeah, sorry. It's not my favorite game. I won't go into too much detail, but I'll just say I don't like the way they handled the combat in that game. The story generally was fine. It was wrapping a lot of things up. It had a lot of like loose ends to wrap up. But I don't know, there's something about either the voice acting or the way they filmed cut scenes. It was very wooden, very static, very lifeless, and it just didn't work. It just didn't work. And I was like, is it me? Like, am I... Like, were the previous games bad as well? But it's like, I go back and I can play through Kingdom Hearts 2, like, final mix version and be like, no, this game's, like, almost perfect. This game's good. That game, not so much. Sorry.
No, you it's have okay. to apologize. You have nothing to apologize for. It's because everyone that I know who's played Kingdom Hearts 1 and or 2 hates Kingdom Hearts 3, so I wanted to see...
Okay, it's not just me.
Yeah, no. You're not an anomaly. Well, this is good for me to know as well, because I've never, you know, directly played these games. So it's good for me to know whether there is a select group of people who just don't like the third game, or whether maybe the game didn't elevate or, you know, evolve with the times. It's very much coming across as it's the latter. You're very diplomatic, but...
I try to be.
Well... You know, from one game that was average at best, let's have a look at your favorite games, your top games. Maybe you've named them already, but do you have a top 5 games? If so, let us know, and why.
That is so tough. it's like I could just go and rattle on forever. It's like, I love all these games. I love them like they're my children. I don't have children, but Like, they're my cats. Yeah. That's the equivalent. But
you have cats?
Yeah, I have two. They're amazing. Nice. Light of my life. They're not in here right now, though, because they'll just cause a racket. But
if they're down to guest feature, we could have them on too.
Maybe. We'll see. But, oh gosh, okay. So top five, it's like, yeah, I'll just try. So I think number one is Super Metroid. I love that game to pieces. Like, I know there are certain gripes with it, but I feel like as a game, it's like one of the best games I've ever played in my life. And this isn't nostalgia talking, because I played this game when I was like 16. Obviously it had been out for like, you know, decades at that point.
What platform is that on?
That was Super Nintendo.
Okay.
I remember playing it on like the Wii Virtual Console and just being like, I've heard a lot about this game. Like, I really like the Metroid franchise. I'd played like some of the previous 2D games before it, but I was like, I should play this one. Everyone, you know, heralds this one as like the best game in the series, one of the best games of all time. I was like, okay, let me try it. And even though it's like, this is a really old game, surely it should feel outdated. It was just like, I don't even know how to describe it. It was like, it just got to like a certain point in the game and everything just clicked. And I was just like, I lost myself for a solid week. I was like, I finished it. I was like, where am I? What did I do? It's done. And then, yeah, I definitely have played just as good games since then, but there's something about that game that's just like magical, and I don't know how to put it into words. But yeah, that is a favorite of mine. You can see my Samus statue over there. I love this character. A growing collection. So yeah, that is definitely number one. Number two, oh boy, I probably have to put like Hades, just because.
Okay.
Yeah, which is weird. We've gone like the complete opposite end, because this is a decently new game, like a couple years old. But like, I remember playing the early access version of it and just being like, well, one to start, I love Supergiant. Like, I think, you know, as if I had like, you know, one dream studio to work at, would definitely be them, like by far. Like, everything they've put out has just been amazing. And then yeah, I have like, let me check Steam real quick. Because it's a little bit ridiculous. Oh, I have 1,096 hours put into that game. Which is like, yeah, that's the expression you should do. No life. Just Hades.
I can't lie. I'm not one of those people at all. When I hit triple figures, I'm like,
I'm just like, because I feel like I'm quite picky in terms of what I like to play. But if I do find one thing that I really like, I'll just put a ton of hours into it. And that happened to Hades. I think what helped as well is like, of course, like, I got fully immersed in the story and the gameplay is great. And then I found out about, I can't remember exactly how I found it out, but it's like trying to learn speedrunning. And that was the game that got me into that. And well, you can see why I've racked up the hours now, because you know, you're just like, yeah, I just need to get this run done. Oh, 4 hours later, oh no, I still haven't got a new PB. What was the point? But yeah, I think kind of like Super Metroid, that is just like a perfect game. Like, there's nothing they don't do in there that's just wrong or shouldn't be there. And the amount of content that's in there is like insane for a tiny, well, I guess not tiny, but very small indie studio. It's like, but yeah,
very impressive.
Maybe, well, I'm not sure if impressive is the right word, honestly. It's too many hours.
Oh right, okay. Yeah. No, oh god, yeah.
But yeah, I do love that game a lot, and like the speedrunning community, I just have to shout them out, because they are like amazing, like just so welcoming, honestly. Like, I don't really interface with like gaming communities much online, because it can be a little bit, I don't want to say toxic, but sometimes it can be a little bit, you know, it's just like people a little bit but this community by far weird, and they don't hold back. They just put everything out there, so I don't need to know. But no, this community has been amazing, like so welcoming. It's like you come in and be like, yeah, I don't know like much about speedrunning, but I want to try this, and just get loads of people just bring them up like everywhere, just trying to help you. It's just, it's so nice. It is really nice. I've only spoke about two games. Okay, I'm gonna hurry up. Okay, so we had Super Metroid, we had Hades. Number three, probably Hollow Knight.
Dope.
Yeah, there's kind of a theme here. Like, I really like my roguelikes, I really like my Metroidvanias, so it's just,
you know what? That is part of the reason why I asked this question. Because more time you can sense a thread or a theme.
Yeah.
But there's nothing wrong with that. It's a different answer for everyone. And that's exactly why I think gaming is, I want to say, the perfect industry, but I mean, there's a long way for it to go in terms of the human side. But in terms of like a product side, the consumerism, I think it's one of the best industries because it's such a variety show.
So much.
I'm not trying to make you feel any type of way for putting 1,000 hours into Hades or liking roguelikes. Those are completely correct and right because it's personal to you.
Mm-hmm. That is very, very true. But yeah.
Sorry, Hollow Knight.
Hollow Knight, yeah.
My bad. Distracted.
It's okay. But yeah, Hollow Knight. Like Hollow Knight, I can't remember how I found out about this game. Like a friend might have suggested it to me. But I tried it and just like, it took a little while for me to get into it. I'd say like maybe 2-3 hours. I was just like, oh, it seems okay, but I'm not really jiving with it. And then you get to like, I think what is supposed to be the second area of the game you're supposed to get to. And I was just like, this game is special. This game is like, the visuals are beautiful. The music is beautiful. The gameplay is like so responsive and like, it's difficult, but you also don't feel like, you know, any mistakes that you make are your own fault. And I like it when games are like that. Like, I don't want to be caught out by nonsense and like weak controls and everything like that. It's like, no, I need responsive stuff. And Hollow Knight has that. And it's just like so unassuming because you're thinking like, again, very, very tiny indie dev studio made this, Team Cherry. It's like, I don't know how they did this because the game is massive. There's so much in there. It's actually kind of overwhelming, but again, just yeah, another perfect game. Honestly, I'm a bit of a snob.
I think you should be though, because the cost of games are rising, so the quality of games has to rise as well.
Exactly. Hey,
£70 for a PS5 game. I mean, it's got to be at least an 8.
Oh my god! At least. Looking in my bank account, like see flies coming out. times are rough.
Times are rough. Oh my goodness! You got to decide between the next game or heating. It's not.
Is that it? It's like, oh, maybe the game though.
It's a game. I could use that on PlayStation. Yes,
exactly. It's fine. Oh man, but yeah, that is a game that I definitely recommend. Like, it's a tough one because it's like if you're not really into Metroidvania as much, like in the whole concept of exploring a huge area and backtracking and finding new abilities to like access new areas and stuff, like that's sort of the core gameplay loop. Like, if you're not into that, it can be a hard sell because that is that game, but. It is very good. It is very, very good. But yeah, that's number three. I need two more. Oh, man. I would say... okay, we'll pivot. I'll say... what's it called? There's a series of visual novels called Zero Escape. I'm not sure if you've heard of it before.
Okay. I think I've heard of it.
There was, so I say the first game out of that series is probably my favorite. It's called 9999... What is it? 9 persons, 9 hours, 9 doors, I think. Which was originally on the DS. And I like my visual novels. Like, I like games like Phoenix Wright. I'm a big fan. I'm not sure if I put that in my favorites, but it's close. It's close.
I'm number six.
Yeah, maybe number six. Put asterisk next to it. but that game, 999, is just... I don't want to say too much because I don't want to spoil anything, but if you like a really good story with really well fleshed out characters, it's very good for that. And it also, it does this thing I really like in games where it's like actually uses the medium of games to tell the story. Like, it's not just like the story slapped on top and the interface doesn't matter, because it does. And it's like, yeah, this is a thing, you know, you do with like this system or as a game. You can't do it as like a TV show or a movie. So it's just like that extra bit of like, oh, okay, this is this is pretty special. But yeah, I'll say that's like solid number four. Like, I feel like after finishing that game, I kind of like not had an epiphany, but just had like a, oh, okay, I just need to sit down and think about this for like a good 2 weeks and not play anything else. Just like let it sink in.
Okay, that's a big game then.
Yeah, I'll say it's not for everyone's taste because it's like, I don't know, it's like it's kind of anime-ish. It's not like typical anime tropes, but there are some in there. So I was like, if you are not a fan of that, you might be a little bit put off. But I say if you stick with it, it does get, I don't know, there's a lot there to like, I think. But yeah, I don't know how else to like show this thing.
Yeah, like, some games you kind of have to spoil it or you know, get into the meat a little bit to kind of get the USP out there. But
yeah,
I mean,
yeah,
considering you know, you don't want to spoil anything, I think you've done quite a good job. Like,
I've done enough.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's, if you're looking for a good visual novel, that'll be a good one if you haven't tried it. Okay, yeah, I need one more. Oh, this is tough. I don't know. I mean, the fifth spot, I could just rattle off a couple that could be there. It's like, could be Kingdom Hearts 2. It could be. I feel like I have to put Tekken in there somewhere. But if I had to say, maybe Tekken Tag Tournament, the first one. I remember playing that game a lot. That was on PS2 as well. But I see there's a theme there. And then potentially Final Fantasy VII as well. I really love both the original, and we'll see where the remake goes, but it's going all right. And then looping back around to my roguelikes, Slay the Spire is a very good game. I have put also a stupid amount of hours into that as well. Oh no, actually not that bad. We're only at 330, but that's like only a couple months compared to Hades, which has been over a couple of years. So.
I like taking only 300. I think that's like my top three games combined.
Oh god!
I am like such a casual.
No. You are not the casual. I just have a problem. That's it.
No, I think you know what you like. As you said, you're a bit of a snob. I would say you know what you like. You know, and when you find a game that you like, you just put so much.
This is it.
Until I get sick of it. So, you know, you named a lot of games there. Kingdom Hearts 2, Tekken Tag Tournament. Have you decided what's taking that coveted fifth spot?
It's tough. So it could, like, you know, depending on the day, that's luck of change, right? It's just like...
Yeah.
Oh, man. I feel like I'll have to say Final Fantasy VII, just because it sort of encompasses another game I really love, Crisis Core, which is like the prequel. They made, see my Zack over here. I love this character.
Zack or Cloud?
Zack.
Okay.
I love Cloud too, but he came first. So.
Fair enough. Yeah.
There you go. So yeah, we'll put Final Fantasy VII in slot 5, and that'll be that.
Dope. That's a very varied bunch of games as well. Like, Final Fantasy, one of the games that I get a lot when it comes to what game made you know that you were a gamer, that one comes up so much. Yeah, because I guess when it came out, it was just about the turn of the century, so
yeah.
Millennium, I should say. So that game is one that really stays in the hearts of a lot of gamers, and Metroid is one of those games that I feel should get a lot more plaudits, but I feel like everyone that has played it understands its brilliance. I remember playing, I can't remember, I don't know if it was Metroid Prime or it had a different name, but
Prime
it was on
is
the
so
DS.
Good, yeah.
Yeah. I remember playing the one on the DS, and that was my first ever Nintendo console. And I've got this memory of like this weird bug sucking my face. And I was traumatized, but I also wanted more.
Right.
Brilliant bunch of games. on, you know, with the games like Zero Escape, it's good that you name games that I probably wouldn't get from someone else, because that showcases your personality as well. And you can tell a lot about a person through the games that they enjoy and the games that they like to share. But yeah, very strong list of games.
Thank you.
One game that you did mention but didn't make your top five was Tekken, of course. And yeah. And I think this was brought up on the day that we met at, I think it was Past the Pad.
Oh, that yeah. Is...
Shout out Black Girl Gamers. That is, I think the franchise I would probably know you most for. If you know, I was to put a game to your face, I'd probably put Tekken. What is it about Tekken that really took over your life for a while?
Again, watching my siblings play through the various Tekkens. Like, I can't remember if they started with like Tekken 2, Tekken 3, and so on. I remember Tekken Tag 1 being the game that I was like, oh, I'm going to pick up this controller and try. And then I love my brother for this, but he's also like set me up on like a really dark path, because it's like, we used to play, he used to like win, defeat me mercilessly. Like, there'll be no handicap, there wouldn't be like, oh, you know, I'll just back off and let you get a couple punches in. He'll be like, no, he's winning. And it's like, it's weird, because I was like, I was quite a quiet kid, but I also realized I'm also very competitive and very stubborn, which is just a terrible mix. I'll just sit there playing the game, just being like, I'm gonna learn, because I need to beat my brother at this game. So I think that sparked, and then yeah, just played. So I played Tekken Tag 1, Tekken 4, Tekken 5. I think maybe it was like Tekken 6 where I was like, all right, I'm better than you now, I've done it a solid, like, however many years that would be. But there was like incremental improvement. I was just like, I guess that sort of helped me stick with it. And I think also generally just like the way, like, all the characters were like so diverse and really cool. And I think I'm just naturally drawn more towards like sort of martial arts focused, kind of like sort of that more physical rather than like using weapons and stuff. So right. Mortal Kombat was always too gory for me. Never really jived with Soul Calibur. Street Fighter, I tried occasionally, but wasn't very good at. And I was like, I like Tekken, I like the 3D movement, I like the characters, I like the hit effects, the sparks, the impact. Like, I think that just sort of clicked for me, and I was just like, oh, well, okay, this is my game then. Everything else is eh.
Shout out to your brother, because he has a very big hand in creating the monster that is Robin.
Yeah, he knows as well. It's just like, I did this.
Like a proud brother, like, yeah, I made that. Yeah. But I mean, you know, if he does hold back, do you become as obsessed with success as you did?
Oh, I mean, I don't. That's a good question. Like, maybe, but I feel like, I feel like I might have known then if he wasn't giving it 100%, and then it would have felt hollow.
Right.
I think maybe he picked that up in me as well. Just like I'll get frustrated when I'm losing, but I'll still be like, play again. I want to play again. Let's go again. So yeah, I think it had to be that way. Otherwise, maybe I would not have stuck with it as much if it's like I had no sort of goal to aspire to, or like no sort of barometer for like how I am improving. So I think that did help.
Fighting games have such a parallel to, you know, real life martial arts or some whatever combat sport you want to put in line to, because you had that, I guess, antagonist in this case, and you were training for years to best this person.
Literal years.
Yeah. Not beat them once, like consistently beat them as well. Mm-hmm. So that, I just love that. That is what the fighting game scene should be about. And I can relate to that. I mean, I've never been, you know, particularly great at the fighting games, but I've been okay. And those were always in the house. They were always in the house with friends and cousins, you know, older than me when growing up. So, you know, there was always a Tekken beating coming. You know, there was always...
Just around the corner, always, don't worry.
And, you know, you just have to get better. There's no other way around it. You don't naturally, you know, get a superpower like in certain anime. You have to learn and, you know, squeeze that pressure out of yourself. And I can relate with the other franchises as well. Street Fighter is something I've only recently gotten into. Soul Calibur kind of never resonated with me. Mortal Kombat, I really liked, but I think that was because, you know, late teens and you kind of like that excessive violence. It's a bit, I'm not interested in it anymore. So I can kind of see where you're coming from. So Tekken is the game for you. So how do you get into the scene that you are part of the East London Fighters? How does that happen?
That's a good question. I guess it started with, we'll go back to Tekken Tag 2 that came out on PS3. I remember buying it. And I think that was the first game where I was actually properly trying to understand the deeper mechanics of the game, not just like, hey, I can do this 10-hit combo or things like that, but just actually like, oh, okay, this is like how you structure a combo. This is like your launcher, your filler, your ender. What are your defensive options? Like, how do you break throws and everything like that? So that was the first game I was actually properly trying to learn stuff. I remember watching a lot of online or overseas tournaments online, mainly America, I think, and loads of like sets on like YouTube of like really good players playing my characters and just being like, oh, this is like insane. And then Tekken 7 came out and I was like, all right, this is going to be my game. I want to do this stuff. I want to go to tournaments and stuff. And then I think it was like pre-release, they were doing like these location tests. And with them coming to the UK, I think the first one might have been in like Birmingham. I've never been to Birmingham before. I was like, I'm going to go. I'm going to get on a train. I'm going to go. Which was like crazy to me because it's like, that's not something I would usually do. I wouldn't be like, oh yeah, I'm going to, you know, go take a train to somewhere solo and like entering a tournament as well. I know no one. It's like, it's not, usually it's like you need to hype yourself up to do that. And there was a bit of fear, but I think my love of the game and wanting to get good, like sort of overwrote that fear. So I remember it was such an abysmal experience. No, just in terms of like the tournament was good, but the way I performed was terrible. Like, I think my first match was, I can't remember, it was against someone like really good and someone that I knew of.
Right.
And I was just like, oh, this is, oh, this is spooky. I'm going to get beat up. And I did. But it was fine. It was fine. It was just all experience. And then my second game might have been in the other order. I can't remember. But either my second or my first game was one that was on stream. And I remember just feeling like, this is like crazy. I'm actually doing the things that I watched other people do. And I was just having like a good time. Like, I was losing, but I was just like, I remember like watching the VOD back at the time and just like, I was just smiling because I was just like, this is amazing. This is crazy. And then I think since then, I was just like, all right, I'm going to make this a thing. So I came back to London. I remember like looking on like Facebook and stuff for like local events and stuff. And I saw one like East London Fighters. And that's when we were based back in Stratford at the time. So I was like, oh, okay, that's like really close to where I am. So I went on like, it was either a Friday evening or like a Saturday. I can't remember exactly what it was. But I went after work with my controller in hand and just like, it was a couple people like filtering in. And I was just like, it was in this old like warehouse type place. So it had a really cool vibe as well. It was just like, oh, okay, this is where the FGC is at. And then since then, they just couldn't get rid of me. I was like, all right, you're stuck with me now. Sorry. But yeah, that's sort of how I just got to, like a lot of the friends I've made have been through East London Fighters, like people like me who are like new to the scene and wanting to learn Tekken and just like come to a local event have been through that. So it's just like really cool how many opportunities it's given me and a lot of people as well. Just like you get the chance to play, you get the chance to like interface with the rest of the community, and then eventually get the chance to like see you on the other side of like running these events and stuff. Like you all sort of learn together, which was crazy, but really, really cool as well.
Honestly, I think that's so wavy that you just went like Birmingham, that's it, you know.
All right, got a ticket.
And you know, again, I could ask, what if you were, you know, I guess defeated by your fears and your worries and stuff, do we get East London fighters Robin? Luckily, we don't have to think about that because
that's another timeline.
Exactly. And you know, sometimes you just need to take that leap of faith. You mentioned earlier that you would watch videos of people using your favorite characters. Do you have a main, or do you like have a select few people that you like to play as?
From Tekken Tag 1 up until like Tekken 6, my main was Lee.
Okay.
It's a really cool, super cool character. It's really hot. Yeah.
He's very wavy. Yeah, I've never got to grips with him.
Oh my god, he's so cool though. Like when you watch a really good one, it's just like it just flows together so well. It's just so good to watch. Yeah, it's just like I want to be that. that was like my main character for a good while. And then I got to Tekken 6, and then there was one of the newcomers called Leo. And I picked this character up, so I was like, oh, they have my name, which is a hint as to my actual name, but they have my name. I was like, I'm playing this character, it's me. Okay, I'm sorted. So those are my two. So Leo became my new main. Lee was like my secondary. And then I stuck with them. And then I got to Tekken 7, which is the latest game. And they're still my main and secondary, though I think this was the first game I actually looked at and learned properly like multiple characters. So I picked up, who did I pick up? Picked up Dragunov, was initially, I think he dropped in like Tekken 5. I always liked to look to him, but I was like, eh. Yeah, so I picked up Dragunov, I picked up Armor King. That might be it. There's a couple other characters around that, which I can play like competently, but I wouldn't say like they are my characters. Right. It's just a case of like, oh, if you're doing friendlies and you just want to, you know, change it up. Like, okay. but yeah, those four I'll say are my group.
Do you ever think that that's the same reason that you picked Lee? Because
I'm very like, I wouldn't call myself an egotistical person, but maybe I am.
It's probably just a point of resonance because there's a rich roster in Tekken. It's crazy now, you know, who knows how many people are going to get an 8, but even in Tekken 4 there was quite a lot of players, so it's almost like, where do I start, where do I begin?
Yeah,
so you kind of like, you have to pick someone.
That's true. I like that justification more than mine.
You have a very good justification as well, because Lee kicks ass.
So cool.
One of those awful players that I hate, you know, fighting. You know, when they're when the person who's playing them is very good.
Huang. that character is not my favorite.
So bad, especially because a lot of times I would just walk in as Steve. So the kicker to my puncher is a terrible matchup. But there's so much utility, especially with, you know, other characters like Feng. You could be in a lot of trouble with competent Feng players, let alone world class.
I won't get into Feng. He's currently terrorizing the season of Tekken 7. It's just Feng's everywhere. There's no escape. He's just very good.
How do you feel about, obviously everyone wants to win, but how do you feel about people just mindlessly following the meta?
I don't know. It's the thing of like, it's not something I do personally, because I very much like the pick a character you like. Like, that makes sense to me. If you're going to be putting like hundreds of hours into this game, you should pick a character you like. But I mean, I understand the mentality of like, hey, I want to win, so I'm going to give myself the best odds, and that's kind of how I look at it. But I don't know. I feel like it's kind of the case of like, if you are a very, very top player, like you have sponsors, like you sort of are going into these tournaments expecting to win, then I could be like, okay, pick your top tier because you have actual stakes, you know. But just going to a local like 12-man tournament, I don't see the point. Just don't see the point.
That's fair. That is fair. So I see you class yourself as retired. I'm putting bunny ears for everyone audio onlys. So how retired are you? Are you like a boxing retired or are you like a pro wrestling retired where, you know, you could come back in 6 months? And you are, why did you take the decision to retire from professionally playing Tekken?
So I think, well, I don't know, that's kind of... So I put the retired in quotation marks just because it's like kind of tongue in cheek. So I feel like a lot of people say they're retired when they're actually not because they're still playing the game. And that's me, basically. And also, you know, it's like there was a period of time where I was properly grinding the game and going to tournaments and wanting to place well. But I don't know, it's also tricky because it's like I never really got the results I was looking for. So in that sense, it's like, you know, I can't really be retired if I was never really like properly up there, right? If that makes sense. So yeah, it was more just like a tongue-in-cheek thing to be like, yeah, I don't really play this game as I used to, but you know, occasionally still dip in, you know, if people saying like, hey, get a lobby going, yeah, okay, I'll jump in for a few games. And
yeah, are you one of those rookie crushes? Oh, you guys are playing Tekken? All right, let's wipe everyone and leave.
No, I mean, I try. Oh, I don't know. No, I try not to. I feel like No. I just play games with like friends and stuff, and we tend to be around the same level, so it's fine. Yeah. If there are times where, like, there have been some events where I've sat down, I could tell the person obviously hasn't played as long or isn't as familiar with like the deeper mechanics of the game. It's like, well, obviously I'm not going to be too much of a tryhard. Like, I'm not going to like pretend I don't know what I'm doing, but you know, I'm not going to be like properly be juggling them for half their health and they can't do the same to me. Just being like, yeah, it's okay, we're just chilling, just relaxing, having a good game, it's fine. But chilling, you know, relaxing. I won't let them win.
There we go. I was like, chilling, relaxing, okay, but you're gonna get that W though.
Yeah, I'm too prideful.
That's fair enough. Do you see yourself getting sucked back into the game? Like, trying to place and stuff like that?
I think so. It's always that thing of like, especially with the World Tour and having just attended the finals as well, and like watching that huge 2-day spectacle of like seeing the best of the best go out. It's just like, it always inspires you to then, as soon as you get back, be like, oh, I want to play this game again, even if you've been away from it for a while. And like, I have been like the last, Elf East London Fighters event we had, I was sort of doing half and half. It was like I was running the stream but also entered in the tournament as well, so it's like let's see. And it was enjoyable. Like, it was more enjoyable than it had been in a while, so I thought, oh, it's probably a sign that I'm ready to come back and just sort of dip back in and have a bit of fun again. So yeah, like, I've signed myself up for, there's another tournament I think in March, maybe first or second weekend in March, based in the Red Bull Gaming Sphere in Shoreditch. So yeah, that should be a cool one. I was just like, I was even an hour in about it when it got announced on Twitter. I was like, should I enter? I feel like maybe I should leave the spot for someone else who was actually like properly grinding the game, but I was also like, I feel like I want to, so let's just put our name down, see what happens. I think I've just been trying to stick with the mentality of like, because I used to get very upset when it's like I go into a tournament and not do very well. So I feel like all the work I've put in has kind of amounted to nothing. Feels like wasted time, and it's like, that's not the right way to look at it. So now I'm like, well, if I'm retired, quote unquote, there's no stakes. I'm going in to have a good time, and as long as I feel like I've played well enough, then that's good enough for me. And I think that's just having that mindset has helped a lot with my enjoyment of the game. It's like, there's no need to put this pressure on myself anymore, especially if I know I'm not dedicating the time to warrant that sort of pressure. Like,
right.
Should just have fun and leave it at that.
And I think that's probably the best thing that you can get out of, you know, competing. Obviously, money, prize money and trophies are nice, but...
Very nice.
But at the end of the day, you know, being able to go home and feel good about yourself, not feel like, oh, here, you know, another one of these, that's very important for your physical and mental health. So, I mean, as long as you're enjoying the game, yeah, keep competing. And you deserve the spots in all the tournaments just like everyone else does. You're not taking a spot from anyone else. They should have got there first.
Very, very true, very true.
So, yeah, I think as long as you are feeling the game, and I mean, for me, it feels like you'll probably be playing Tekken forever for as long as you can. Whether that is in a strictly professional sense or, you know, just more casual, I still think, you know, you got that Tekken bug. And I mean, I feel like I would be remiss if I didn't ask you about Tekken 8. How are you feeling about that game? You know, we've seen a certain somebody's coming back. We thought they were dead, spoilers, but they're not. How are you feeling about Tekken 8?
Oh, God. I feel like if you'd asked me this a couple days ago, I would have been like, I'm ready for Tekken 8. I'm excited. I want to see more info. Like, give me everything. But now, after watching the announcement they put out at the finals, I mean, it was really cool. So it's like they had a full 35-minute video where they went in depth with the game director, I believe, just talking about actual like core mechanics and what they're changing and how that impacts the game, which was really, really interesting to listen to. It was nice to sort of hear the reasonings for why, because I feel like that is something which we don't easily receive. They aren't keen to tell us the why, just the this is the changing. So that was cool. The only issue is that this direction they're going in, the keyword they used was aggressive. And that scares me a little bit, because I'm like, I feel like generally out of all the fighters, Tekken tends to fall more into the camp of a defensive game. But that has been shifting over the last couple of years. Over the last couple of years, just with the new seasons that come out for Tekken 7, it seems they're trying to edge everyone more and more towards like that sort of aggressive play. I think I can only assume because they feel like it looks more exciting, better for spectators and everything like that. The only issue is the people that are playing the games are then going to be stuck with these very aggressive mechanics that might not all mesh together very well. Maybe might not leave the rest of us with a different play style who like to play more defensive. Like I tend to play more defensive. Like I often get the comment from people who play me for the first time is like, you don't push a lot of buttons. You just move around a lot. And I'm just like, yeah, that's how I like to play. Don't like to push a lot of buttons because then I get counter hit and it hurts. So seeing that demonstration, that video they put out and them explaining the direction they're going to go and everything they listed off was like, yeah, this is going to promote more aggressive play. You can enter this mode once per round where you get like super powered up attacks and your attacks do chip damage and it's all very stressful. And it was like they had a small flyaway comment about like, oh, if you were to defend these attacks, what would you do? And it's like, you know, movement's still in the game, you can still sidestep, backdash. It's like, yeah, we already know that. What else is there? They'll let you can use. This is so stressful.
Good.
I'm like, oh, you can use a power crush. A power crush, this mechanic exists in Tekken 7. That's basically a armored move that you can use to sort of interrupt your opponent. Like they're hitting you for like a 3-hit combo. You can push that power crush and you'll take a bit of damage, but you also get them off you. And that was their response. It's just like, oh, that's it. Power crush, that's it. It was like, but that's still a very aggressive move. Like, I don't want to do that. Can I do it without taking damage, please? No.
They're fully in the camp of You want to defend? Oh, attack first.
pretty much. They're saying offense is the best defense, and I don't like that. I need my defense as the best defense, please. it's like it's hard to tell, like, sort of the general consensus of how everyone feels about the game. Like, at least the new information they put out, but it seems like most people I've talked to has been a little bit skeptical. Like, oh no, they want to sort of, I'm not sure if they're trying to make everyone Akuma. So, you know, they put Akuma in Tekken 7.
Yeah.
And all his lovely, beautiful 2D mechanics that don't quite work for us in a 3D game. He kind of breaks the rules a little bit. And I feel like they want to make every single character that. They saw us complaining. They're like, okay, we'll just make everyone Akuma, so it's fine. It's like, no, please.
There's an easier solution. I tell you, there's a much easier solution.
Much easier. And they're just like, nah, this is cool. Everyone likes this. It's like, no. Like, it's just, yeah. It's like, I don't want to get too pessimistic. But it's also like, if that's the only information we've been given, it's hard not to be skeptical. So I'm just like, I'll just wait and see what else they decide to reveal. I'm a little bit worried that Tekken 8 might not be my game, but that's fine. I'll just watch.
That's fair enough. And it will still be a game that's engaging to watch and to spectate. Mm. If you decide that that game is not for you, I will say that I've definitely felt a shift in the discourse about Tekken 8 over the past 48 hours. And that is because of everything from TWT. Of course, you said they want the more offensive style of play, which I'll get into. But then there's also the Nina Williams.
Yeah, I forgot about her. I just got everything else overwhelming.
I mean, I was surprised that it was such a big deal, but I digress. There were a couple of mutuals that I respect their opinion on fighting games, specifically Tekken, and one of them was as negative as you can without being straight up saying, this is trash, this is garbage, I don't know, U tier. They were not a fan of the introduction or the implementation of weapon-based combat,
right?
Which I get, because if we go earlier to, you know, you talking about why you like Tekken so much, it was the martial arts aspect, the 3D, you know, world. It is the most like the Jet Li films I like to watch while growing up, so it's already got that resonance with me. So then bringing the weapons kind of takes it away from the, and it's not super realistic, but there is an essence, there's an aspect of realism with all the different styles, right?
Yeah.
So they've kind of taken away from that, and it's kind of more playful, fantastical style, which isn't going to please everyone, because Tekken has been running for many years doing something that, you know, it specialized in, and now it wants to flip the formula. But you have, I have seen other people who are for the weapon-based combat because it makes different characters stand out. And if you don't like Nina, well, there's a Steve, or there's a King, or there's a Jack. So I do get both sides. I do like that you are upfront with the fact that you like to play very reservedly, or you like to hand back until you know you can get those hits in, because, hey, it's a fighting game. You don't want to be the person who who hits their opponent five times where, you know, they get hit four. You kind of want to be the guy who gets three hits in and gets hit zero times.
Yeah.
And there's no, I don't think that's wrong, right? I just think it's a different way of playing. I'm definitely more of the, hey, I don't mind getting hit as long as I can hit you more times. But that's my cross to bear. And sometimes, you know, I will lose game because of that. But I don't think there's, personally, I don't like the thought process of trying to penalize or remove that from the game, because it kind of makes people have to play the other way, which you're handing certain players an advantage. I mean, I don't think that's the most fair. Yeah, there's several ways to fight. We've seen it in MMA in real life. You know, you do have your pro wrestlers, your boxers, your jiu-jitsu fighters, and there are pros and cons to each style. And I think that's the best way for a fighting game to thrive.
Yeah, I would agree with that for sure.
What can the FGC scene do to attract more players? Because I think objectively it's the best it's ever been with in terms of skill level. I mean, the information's out there, there's YouTubers, you know, there's King J, there's so many people that you can learn from. You know, Arslan Ash came out of relatively nowhere and, you know, and shocked the world. So there's skilled players coming out of more places, you know, America, Korea, Pakistan. What do you think the fighting game scene can do to attract more players on a global scale?
It's a tough question. I feel like just because there are, well, there's definitely multiple ways you can address it, multiple ways you can look at it. On like that global scale, like in terms of like actually seeing whole new regions come out and participate. I think the way they handled the World Tour this past year has been a brilliant way to address that. Because previously you had a global leaderboard. So it was just a case of whoever could travel the most, whoever could attend the most tournaments, could rack up the most points. And it's just like, that's fine as well, because usually it would be filtered by the best of the best would be at the top. The way they changed it for the next tour was to have it so tournaments were region locked and have it so there wasn't exactly a global leaderboard, but leaderboard per region. So you get like two people qualifying from West Europe, two from East Europe, you get two from Japan, maybe three from Korea, two from like North America, and then you get places like South America, maybe not South America, but like Mexico, Pakistan, Australia, South Africa, like all like these regions where it's like, okay, you probably have people that play Tekken, but you wouldn't know the level of how good they are because they wouldn't get that same opportunity. And they did. And it was like so crazy. Like I was most hyped to watch those players play. And you would assume because they're lesser known, they won't be as good, but they play just as well. And it's like, it's just really like heartwarming to watch. And it's just like, I want more of that. So I definitely think the way they handled it, like helped in that aspect, just like putting eyes on other players from like underrepresented regions. So definitely, you know, the big wigs at like Namco and Capcom, like they're doing their world tours, they should take that approach if they want to get more people in. In terms of like more grassroots local level for getting new players in, that's tricky because it's always the case of like, I always have that thing of like, you may watch these tournaments online and everything and be like, I want to do that, but go into your first tournament, especially if you're going alone, is terrifying. It's absolutely terrifying because it's like, you can say to people, oh yeah, everyone's like super welcome and stuff, but it can, obviously I don't have any like specific examples, but just generally like sometimes it can feel a little bit hostile or like you don't belong. If you're not as good, then you don't deserve to be there. I've had like shades of that like come through every so often. I know it's slightly different as well because, you know, you have been a new player, but then you also might have other factors that, you know, sort of amplify that, like being a woman, for example, trying to come into that sort of space is always like, I don't know, yeah. It's kind of spooky. So definitely are a lot of things we can still do. Like, I feel like just with the tour being available and like sort of having that encouragement of like, yeah, people should come out and compete and go to events. Like, we have seen like a lot of new players come up over the last couple of years, which has been like really cool. It's like, it's not just the old heads anymore. There are like new names coming up like every year of just like, and being really good. It's just like, oh, because they would play online. I think having better netcode as well probably helps with that. It's like you get the opportunity to play online and play with people, and you know, it's not going to be perfect one-to-one as it is offline, but it's close enough where you can get that good and then get better when you come offline. But yeah, it's tricky. It's like, I say, I'll shill a little bit again, like during lockdown, obviously there were no offline events. We couldn't host offline events, so everything was online. And as part of East London Fighters, we held our online tournaments, but also held very specific ones called Rank Up. And these were designed specifically for new blood, for new players to come in and be like, you know, we're going to throw you in a tournament, but we're going to throw you in a tournament with people of a similar skill level. Mm-hmm. So we'll have curated tournaments for each of those, like, say, you know, the first one to five ranks in Tekken, if we're going by like the ranking system, like you would all be in one tournament, then like, you know, 6 to 12 would be in another one, and then like 13 to 20 and then 20 plus, or however you want to describe it, but just like sort of grouping people up like that. So it's like, okay, you're thrown into a tournament, so you get that experience, but you're not thrown right in the deep end,
right?
And maybe you get a chance to learn something. And then it's also the case of like the winner of each tournament would then rank up to the next tournament with the next threshold of like those higher level players, and then see how they fare there. And I just thought that was a really neat way to do things, like a really cool way to do things. It's just like, oh, if this was around when I was still learning the game, like this would have been amazing. Like, so yeah, I think it's just like, you know, obviously if you're playing online and you feel like you're really good at the game, you're probably not going to have that same barrier to come out and compete. But for those who are more reserved, or maybe not aren't as sure of themselves, or maybe don't have other friends who play, so they don't have like someone to go with them, like I think just thinking outside the box in terms of those events can help as well. Of just like, you know, doesn't have to be like the lion's den you're walking into. It's okay. Like people are there to help you. I don't know. It's just such a tough question, because it's like, it kind of relies on the nature of the person. Sure. Like with myself being so competitive, I was just like, yeah, I'm scared, but that's not going to stop me. I'm still going to do it. But there's someone else who'd be like, they might not have that same competitiveness in them, and that might be a barrier. And you don't want that to hold them back. You want to introduce them into the scene as well, and have it be like a good experience where they aren't like stressing or fearful or like just thinking of things that shouldn't apply. But yeah, I don't know. It's like I have in my head of just like, oh, when we run like offline events, of being like, I think for a time I would be the person that would just be like, hi, hello, like, welcome. This is our space. How are you doing? Do you play the game? You can play here. We'll play some casuals. Maybe just having people dedicated to that sort of role of just being like, hey, you can, if you're not too sure, you can go to this person. They will like show you around, show you how things work, but that involves more heads, more people volunteering, and that's always a tough.
Yeah. So, I mean, it goes without saying, money is probably the thing that could make everything easier. It would be nice if we got to the place where, you know, you could just not have volunteers, but, you know, people who are getting paid for their work, because it's important. That you're safeguarding security, it helps with so much. And that first impression for someone who hasn't really run a tournament can really be the make or break. Hey, I play Tekken forever, or I don't think Tekken's for me.
It's not for me.
Yeah, I mean, that was my last question, but you were very eloquent and you actually gave me more questions to ask you. So, so first of all, I want you to, if you can, shout out Rank Up again, because that is an amazing initiative, and I would love if someone, at least one person, checks this out and, you know, they like Tekken and they'd like to test their mettle. I would love for them to, you know, maybe sign up for a Rank Up event. So how can newbies, or not, maybe not newbies, but people who haven't, you know, run that pro circuit, how can they get involved with Rank Up?
Yeah, well, I guess it's a tricky one, because Rank Up specifically was like a online thing. Right. You know, when we were during lockdown and we're stuck in our houses and couldn't meet people. So yeah, I mean, it's definitely something I could propose. It's just like, hey, would we want to bring this back? Because like, I think it did work very, very well. Or even like bring it back in an offline format. But that might require more
volunteers,
more people, more bodies. Yeah, and it's just like, oh god. But yeah, I'll say generally though, like, I say our community of East London Fighters, we are very welcoming. Like, we have events. Well, I say all events are like monthly at this point. It's like usually the last Saturday of every month. I'll have a tournament going. I expect with the new world tour, and we'll be putting on a lot of the like local dojo events to coincide with the world tour and gaining points and that stuff. But yeah, if it's the case that you are new, you want to get into Tekken and you are based in London, then definitely come and check us out. I mean, there are also other scenes, like just over the UK in general. There's like, I'm going to forget them all. Wait, sorry, Discord. South Wales FGC. I'm pretty sure they do events. There is Iron Pride. The owners of this actually offshoot from Elf. They still hang around. So Fast Legs of Fury, Smudge, a couple lovers as well. Shout outs to you guys. they run their events as well occasionally. Like, I've helped out with a couple of their online ones. There's almost like too many to remember. And it's really terrible that I'm not remembering all of these. But
it's a lot to remember, to be fair.
It's a lot. It's a lot. Oh gosh. But yeah, we have, it's like, I feel like you probably should be able to find a local for every area of the UK map. There will be something. It's just a case of do a little bit of hunting. But if you are curious, like, I don't mind if people want to reach out to me and just be like, hey, I live like here, like, where should I look? And I can find that info, just not right now, because I'm struggling to multitask.
That's fair enough. I mean, you remembered a lot, to be fair. So yeah, make sure to check out Robin if you do have an interest in Tekken and you'd like to take that further and go join some locals. My other question was, as a woman, how differently do you feel you've been treated or approached when it comes to these settings? Because I'm not completely sure why, but it does feel like some men believe that because you're a woman, you can't press buttons as well as they can. So So I had a conversation with someone the other day, and she was telling me how she plays COD, and she is very good. She will take out a lot of men, and she can't have a mic on because obviously as soon as she starts talking, bare sexist abuse, all of that nonsense. So I pose to see how are you treated in general when it comes to, you know, attending these tournaments? Do people recognize you? Are you familiar enough that, you know, they don't really send crap your way, or do you still deal with rubbish, you know, at an often rate, I guess? How do you deal with all of that stuff?
Yeah, so, I mean, that's a good question. Just because it's the nature of being a woman in games in general is just always going to be a very different experience and probably a more difficult one, unfortunately. Trying to be in a sing-song voice so I don't get angry.
I mean, we've gotten angry on this podcast before, so feel free. Free the realness.
Oh, man. But, yeah, I mean, it's a tricky one, because I feel like in the beginning, like, I definitely felt that, like you said, there was the assumption of, oh, probably, like, they'll sit down and probably underestimate me. Like, nothing else to go off, but probably just because I'm not a man. So, like, she doesn't know what she's doing. Oh, my God. It was always really great, though, when you look back afterwards when I beat them and just be like, yeah, GG's.
the smug smile.
Oh, man. But, yeah, so there is that. And I feel like that in of itself is, like, it's really frustrating, especially if you're someone like myself and you want to not necessarily prove to everyone else that you're good, but just like, you know, I shouldn't have to prove myself, but you feel like you have to. So again, I think that kind of chimes back to before when I was saying about the pressure I was putting on myself, feeling like, oh, if I feel like if I don't do good enough, then I'm going to be seen than less than, because, you know, it's expected that it wouldn't be good, right? So I feel like that played into it a lot. There were definitely some occasions where starting out, I don't know, I feel like it wasn't overt, but I would feel like, oh, I'd walk in, try and like squeeze myself into a group when they're talking about stuff and just kind of get ignored. So I'll wander away and be like, oh, it's okay, it's fine. But I didn't want to get involved anyway. That's okay. And there'll definitely be times where it's like, I don't know, like having experience of like, oh, like I'll sit down and play. The person was previously like, you know, ignoring or not really caring to talk to me. And then as soon as I showed that I could play, they were interested. And then it turned to like, oh, can I get your number? And it's like, hi. Why are you like this?
You like games?
It's just like, why else am I here? Like, you could have shown me a little bit more respect before, and then, you know, but that's not the case. It's like, you know, if you can't push buttons, you're not seen as worthy of their right. time. It's just like so bizarre. It's a video game. But yeah, I mean, all that stuff is definitely like lessened a lot, especially with my time in the FGC and doing the work I have with Elf. It's like, I think it has gotten to the point where obviously not everyone recognizes me, but locally, obviously people know who I am. And when I go abroad, sometimes like people know who I am, and it's nice because I feel like that's giving me a certain barrier of protection, because it's like, well, obviously we're not going to go for her because people know her. She says stuff that people are going to rally up, rather than just like, you know, someone else who's a fresh face, and that can also be just very insidious. But then you also hear, like, I also see a lot of times of like, you know, other women who are well known who do get that, who still get that sort of treatment. It's just bizarre to me, but it might be the, I don't know. I feel like I tend to just, like, I am very friendly, but I feel like I also get the response sometimes when people first approach me. It's just like, oh, you seem like so standoffish. It's just like, no, I'm just a little bit like shy. Right. And I tend to be quite quiet and I keep to myself, and I tend to interact with people I know well, probably because of the fear of like interacting with unknowns and then getting that response. So I tend to be more reserved, yeah, but when you get to know me, I'm just like really stupid and goofy. But it's like getting to that point, it's like, you know, do I want to put myself out there and possibly like receive that sort of interaction, like that unwanted interaction? So maybe that helps with just being like, yeah. And, you know, if you do your nonsense, I don't forgive or forget very easily. I'm just like, I don't have time for this. Sorry. Sorry.
Robin said, God forgives, I don't.
honestly. It's just like, I know people change and stuff, but I'm like, there are enough people in the world that don't do that crap that I can surround myself with. So yeah. I think that's the path I take. Just least resistance, please.
Yeah, that's more than fair enough. So I guess in that vein, do you have advice for any women who want to get into Tekken, or any non-binary people that would like to get into Tekken? And I mean, they see the type of people who are, you know, they've got their face on, you know, Twitter, Instagram, and what advice would you give to them if you want to kind of like break into the pro Tekken scene?
I mean, it's definitely, it's that thing. Like, I feel like, number one, if you can maybe convince like friends and stuff to come with you to events, that's always good, because you always have that buffer, right? You always have that people that you know and trust, and you'll be safe regardless. Number two, I say there are like a couple like communities, like based on Discord and stuff. Like there is the, I'm going to forget the name, Divine Muses, which was not manifested. It was created. It was created by Rose. She is another big name in the community, has done a lot of really good stuff and created that sort of as a safe haven for women, non-binary people, where it's like just for them. And it's just for them. So I'll say, like, if you are getting into, I mean, mainly Tekken, but there's also other, like, you know, people play other fighting games, like, definitely seek that out. There's also, as I mentioned before, Iron Pride. another Discord space, another community, as you can tell probably from the name, focusing more on like LGBTQ plus community. So that's the case as well. There's a safe space for you. I don't know. I feel like there's a lot of people I can vouch for, but that's more, it's probably not concrete enough. But in terms of like actual tangible communities you can reach out to, I say definitely start there as a woman or non-binary person and just, we'll take care of you. Basically, they will take care of you.
That's very sweet. And it's good to know that there are communities created just for that, to create that safe space for people who just want to play a game that they love.
Mm-hmm.
I do want to ask you a bit about your time, because you are a professional, an industry professional as well.
Somewhat.
So we move away from Tekken, where you're professionally known for helping set up events and helping beat people up, to now Mediatonic, where... you know, it's a very different vibe. Yeah, talk to us a little bit about your time there.
Yeah, but it's definitely less stressful. My day job is less stressful. But yeah, I mean, I joined Mediatonic about 4 years ago, 4 years and a bit. I think it was like the end of 2018, December 2018. Before then, I was not in a good spot. I was working in recruitment. I was not having a good time. I was like, I need to find my way out. It's been 2 months. I'm done. Sorry.
Oh, wow. Don't find recruitment.
Never again. I definitely did not have the mentality for it whatsoever. It was just the wrong space for me. I was like, okay. At that point, I'd sort of put my dreams of getting in the game industry like on a back burner. I was like, okay, this probably isn't going to happen. I'm not going to try and look for it. I'll try and do other stuff. And then I saw a job posting for like a QA role. I was like, I can do that. Let's try it. Let's try it and see what happens. But yeah, the interview process for that was like super smooth. Like, I think it was maybe like 2 or 3 rounds and got through, joined the team. And everyone on my team was like super lovely. And yeah, I was doing that for about maybe a year and a half, 2 years as a QA, where I learned a lot. And it was nice as well, because like QA is a sort of role where you don't necessarily need specific experience. Obviously, it can help, but it's seen as like the entry level role for like a reason. But you also learn a lot, and I did learn a lot. But I think after like that 1.5 year, 2 year point, I was like, sort of figuring out, okay, I don't want to like continue with this, don't want to try somewhere else, don't want to look for somewhere else. And my manager at the time mentioned to me this, you know, you could move into like game design. I was like, nah, I'll be a terrible designer. I can't do that. I can't. I'll just be designing a map. I'm like, I don't know. I can play the games, but don't ask me to design them. I was just like, okay, what other options are there for me? And it was just like, okay, you know how to code, right? I'm just like, somewhat, yeah. It's been a little while, I'm a bit rusty, but yeah, know the fundamentals. I was like, okay, have you heard of an S-step before? I'm like, well, do you come again? What is that? It was like, SDET stands for Software Development Engineering Test. It's basically sort of a halfway point between QA and engineering, in which you are looking for ways to sort of, like, instead of QA, which is a lot of like manual testing, like you'll boot up the game, play through, try and find bugs and everything like that. Whereas automated testing would be, you know, you'd write some code to, like, say you wanted to verify that the game boots up without crashing. Instead of having to do that manually every so often, you could just write a couple lines of code and just set that to run. And then, you know, the rest of QA don't have to faff about with that anymore. That's like the gist of it. But I was like, oh, okay, I could do that. But what was really nice about Mediatonic was they saw I was kind of trailing off a bit with my current role in QA, but instead of like just sort of fobbing me off, was looking for ways to like, okay, how can we work with you? Like, what else would you like to do? And then also gave me the space, like, to learn on the job as well. Like, obviously I was going home and doing a bit of studying, but it was also like I'd have time at work where I could just focus on learning the things I would need for this new role, which was, yeah, amazing. Like, I don't think many places would do that, like, be willing to, like, invest in your employees, right? Yeah, so I did that for a little while and then fully transitioned from QA to STEP, and I've been doing that for, like, yeah, I guess about 2 years now, trying to do quick maths in my head. And yeah, that's been really cool. Like, I've learned so much, but it's also the case of, like, I have really bad imposter syndrome. And I feel like it's flaring up a lot with this, of just, like, it'll get to a point where it's like, okay, I'm learning this new thing. I've got the grips of this new thing. Oh, no, it's another new thing. It doesn't stop. It never ends, which is great because it keeps you on your toes. And it's like, I can never get bored. But it's also, like, quite stressful. I feel like, when am I going to hit my break point where I'm just like, I can't do this anymore? But we'll see. We haven't come to that yet, but we'll see.
I mean, hopefully you never will, because you do seem very talented. You've got a lot of skills, obviously. And I feel like you're kind of one of those people that likes to not throw themselves in the deep end, but you like to challenge yourself and you like to improve all the time. And you seem like you're at the right place for that, with great employers who try to work with you when they realize stuff, you know. I feel like we're in a transition now where a lot of the new age employers are kind of employee friendly, and they're trying to work with them instead of going, okay, well, this isn't working, bye.
Yeah,
you know, they're kind of like, they look at what you can do, what your skills are, and you know, they try to come to you where you would be most happy, where you're the best fit. So yeah, that's a big plus. And obviously that, you know, makes you a lot happier as well inside and outside. So it's, you know, it's just a very nice change from the recruitment world that you were in before.
Ooh, that was dark times.
So for anyone who isn't aware of Mediatonic, they are responsible for the overnight success again, Bunny is. Four Guys. Now, that was a game, I think it came out relatively later than Among Us, but it was that kind of ilk that it kind of captured the populace all at once, it seems. Now, I remember Four Guys being released day one on PS Plus, and I picked it up. I was like, okay, new game, it's free, why not? Loved it straight away. Got a few friends, we played online, because I'm pretty sure this was peak lockdown. Just vibes, absolute vibes. We were cussing each other, we were having fun, we were losing. It was so much fun. How has Four Guys' success been for you, being on the other side of that? How has that affected you? I guess another way I could put that question is, why do you think the game performed so well?
I mean, definitely to touch on your point of, like, you know, it came out during peak lockdown. It's like, people were, you know, obviously separated from their friends, their family, all going through really, like, tough times, tough situation, and just trying to deal with all this. And then, you know, I think that was definitely the right game at the right time. And I mean, I feel like if it came out another time, let's say pre or post lockdown, probably still would have seen some success. But I think the moment it came out definitely helped a lot, with just, like, this, it was such a beautiful distraction, and also just the sort of game you needed, where it was just lively and bright and fun and could just take you away from a little bit of the misery at the time. I feel it's weird I feel like, because I didn't start development on the game, like, I came on after it launched, but I feel like the people that did work on it could tell it was going to be something special. But I also don't think anybody in the studio thought it was going to be as big as it was. We were like, who? Like, when they came out and said, oh yeah, best-selling, like, most downloaded game on PS Plus, I was like, huh? Who? What? Our little bean game? Excuse me. Just like, I, yeah, and then since then, it's just been like, insane, like crazy, especially then, like, you know, that success leading on to further successes and like leading into, you know, us then joining the Epic Games group and getting to be part of their like family. Yeah, that's a nice way to say it. Family. Which has been amazing as well. It's just like, I still like, I don't know, it's weird. It's like, yeah, I worked on the game, working on the game, but also like I still go around like I'm happy to like buy merch and stuff. Like I filled my windowsill with just Fall Guys plushies. So I'm just like, oh yeah, I see my little Fall Guys over there. Like, as much as I can, because it's crazy to think, like, you know, I went from like growing up having this idea of like, oh, I want to be in the games industry, I want to like work on games, make games, and then getting to the point where I've joined this company and then made my mark on this game that's like reached out and like resonated with so many people. It's still crazy to me to think like I was in some any way part of that, you know. It still blows my mind sometimes. Just like I feel like a little bit detached around this, like, you know, say, oh yeah, I'm a game developer, what are you working on? Fall Guys, you might not have heard of it. It's like, what, Fall Guys? It's like, oh okay, oh, you have heard of it. That's
my god, that must be the best icebreaker.
It's like, okay, yeah, I don't have to worry about social interaction conversations again. I got my That's it.
Well, Fall Guys was a absolute instant success, I would say, as soon as it hit the markets. I feel maybe more games could learn from that, you know, potentially being day one on, you know, a service that a lot of people are gonna play. Obviously Game Pass is just, you know, by far the best single service that you can get in gaming. It's elite. So I'm sure a lot of people are consuming games that way, but PlayStation Plus is in plenty of homes. So, I mean, that's what, maybe 50 million people? It's a lot of consoles that, you know, Fall Guys landed in straight away day one. So, yeah.
It's a good strategy.
Amazing strategy. It worked out so well. And of course it's fun, it's non-violent, it's wholesome. It's got a lot of Total Wipeout and Takeshi's Castle.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. Takeshi's Castle was like the prompt. Just like, basically, can we just make this game? Like, yeah.
That makes so much sense, because I remember playing it on like day one or something. And I was just, this is really fun. I don't know why though. I grew up a massive Takeshi's Castle fan, and
yes.
I think I only saw one human being ever win.
I feel like I was like, this must be rigged, but I'm still watching it.
It's rigged, but it's so funny. Like skipping stones, and you know, the one with the doors.
Oh, skipping stones, yeah.
what a fun show. Fall Guys captured that essence perfectly, I feel. So from, you know, playing your games from a very young age, to mastering games, to developing games. Now you've got, as you said, a footprint on games that have been enjoyed on a global scale.
Mm-hmm.
If you could make a game with all the resources at your disposal, so time, money, any other resources that you need, no limits, what type of game would you make?
That's a Does it have to be just one?
No, it doesn't. It could be multiple.
Oh man, I mean, well, definitely the dream has always been to work on or create like a fighting game, for sure. Like, it has to be done, because I've put too many hours of this of my life to fighting games, so it has to be done. I don't know exactly what style or what, like maybe 3D, but that seems tricky. Like 3D fighters, there's Tekken and Soul Calibur. And Soul Calibur isn't really doing so hot. There's Tekken.
Honestly, the fighting game, there's never been more of a disparity, I feel, than right now. Street Fighter, Tekken, Mortal Kombat, and then there are spots, you know, for
Dragon Ball. Yeah, floating around.
Yeah, Dragon Ball FighterZ is leasing that spot, but that's not going to be around forever. And then you've got other games, Killer Instinct, you know, I hope comes back as well. Yeah.
Please, Microsoft, please.
Right? I feel that's a logical step for them.
But I don't trust them, though. They're just You know, you don't have a fighting game. Killer Instinct is perfect. I love that game so much. That probably gets an honorary mention for my favorites list. I was trash at it.
Number seven.
But yeah. Number seven. Oh, man.
Well, it's also good that you can acknowledge the greatness of games that we're not necessarily the best at. That's another unique skill that you get with games, you know.
Yeah.
Don't really get that with movies or TV shows. It's just not for me.
Is it? Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, Xbox have made a lot of good decisions in the last few years after a lot of bad decisions the years before that. So, you know, they are quietly, amassing a super team of studios here and there. I think the fighting scene is one that they don't have. And
yeah,
they've got something for that. They just need to bring it to the modern day.
Let's hope they do.
Yeah, the 3D scene is a rough scene. It's tough. Virtual Fighter tried to come back a couple years ago and it just didn't work. Yeah, so there are a lot of ways to make fighting games work. 2D, 2.5D, 3D. There is no, hey, this is the way to do it. You know, it's all about what you put into it when communicating your vision to the screen.
Yeah.
That was a tangent. The question was, what games would you make? So you said a fighting game.
I have a fighting game. What else? Like, I'd love to work on a Metroidvania for sure. Like, maybe even above a fighting game. Just love that. I just love the gameplay loop of those sort of games. It's just like very satisfying to be like, okay, I've figured this game out. And also lends itself quite well to like speedrunning, which I've found is a new obsession of mine, of course. So we have fighting game, Metroidvania, and probably I have a soft spot for like visual novels. Like I've half written a couple over the years, but never taken the time to actually make it a thing. So maybe I should do that, but I'm lazy, so.
I mean, you're doing so much, working on Fall Guys, you're helping, organize tournaments, you're putting in the hours to get back into the game. So it's always tough to find more time to find that, to do that extra thing that you want to do. But I mean, maybe it'll be good. You never know what is going to be the success story.
True, very true, very true.
And it goes to show, like, it matches up with your favorite games as well. You're fighting, you have your roguelikes, you got your visual novels as well. So I feel that makes sense. If I was to guess, I would say those because of your top five. So, no, it's good. Well, this was a super jam-packed edition of the Streamcast with Robin, who has been an amazing guest. If there's anything you'd like to say, a message as we wrap up this episode, feel free to share, and also let the people know where they can find you, because I'm sure there's going to be people who dig your vibe. They're going to want to play Tekken with you. Let them know how they can reach out to you or follow you.
I don't really do social media that much, except for you find me on Twitter. I post occasionally on Twitter. That's sort of the main outlet. and I stream occasionally on Twitch. What's my name? Robin _TK, maybe?
Something like that. We'll find out and make sure we put it in the description.
But yeah, I'm on Twitch, usually playing, I guess lately, playing a little bit of Tekken, but mainly Hades. If you're into any speedrunning, that's my jam. That's my jam.
How excited are you for Hades 2?
Oh my, like the trailer started and I was sat there trying to decipher exactly what's going on. I was like, is this a new game? But I thought for one second Supergiant were making a fighting game. I was just like, but it was not to be. And then I realized, I was like, wait, this character has the same like headband thing that Zacharias does. And I was like, and then they said Hades 2. I legit cried. Like, I don't like, I'm not a super like, like emotional part. Yeah, like in terms of like the sadder emotions, but I legit like cried. I was like, I let out a scream. I was like, I don't do that. I don't do that. Because I think as well, because they said, you know, every time people ask, like, oh, would you do a sequel? Because Hades has been so successful, so popular. And they're like, no, we don't do sequels. And it's true. Up until this point, they hadn't done any sequels for any of their previous games. So it came as a complete shock of like, they said they was not going to do this. Mm-hmm. So I like put it out of my head, even though it hurt me a lot. A lot. But now it's Hades 2, so I'm just like, I'm waiting for that early access, please. Because they said they'll do early access, so like, let me in.
I hope they supply you with all the good stuff.
please.
But, yes, sorry, I did interrupt. You were in the middle of shouting out your socials and stuff.
Oh, no, yeah, I mean, I think that's about it. It's Twitch. Yeah, I'll say a shout-out to East London Fighters, of course, because that's where we do all our tournament stuff. So if you definitely want to get into any of that, you can hit us up. Also on Twitter, we also, like, stream, like, 99% of our tournaments on Twitch as well. And, yeah, we have a Discord as well, which is for East London Fighters. I was going to say for myself, it's not for myself, it's for East London Fighters. But yeah, I think that's it. Like, I'll just, you know, individual people that's contributed a lot, like Grimulus is the head honcho of East London Fighters, and he's done so much for the scene. So definitely shout outs to him, like, you know, bringing me on board onto the team and just like letting me mess with stuff, basically. And then everyone else that's a part of that as well. I'll say shout outs to my friend Lucas, goes by Pun Life. He's helped like so much in terms of live streams. He's made my job a little easier. He literally built a stream overlay from scratch. Like,
wow.
Insane, which we are using now, and it's wonderful. It's called Punduction. So if you want to support that, throw the link in there. I'm shilling.
Of course, we'll put a link in to you.
Yeah, it's like so many people that just do so much work for the scene, because we just love to be able to give back. And yeah, it's been good. I mean, I think that's it. Hopefully I definitely have forgot something, and I apologize preemptively, but that's all I got.
It's all right. If you remember anything, we can edit it and post or put it in a pinned comment as well. It just goes to show, you know, how many people were involved in making you who you are now and what you've been able to give back. So there's just a lot of people on that journey. So no worries. Well, thank you so much, Robin, for joining us on this episode of the Streamcast. If you'd like to keep up to date with us, you can follow us on Streamcast _ Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. YouTube.com/Streamcast if you like to watch your podcast. If you like Let's Plays, reviews, all that good stuff, hit that bell so you get every video as soon as it goes live. Subscribe, leave a comment, give this video a thumbs up. That helps us out a lot. I want to ask you, who is your favorite Tekken character? Whether you main, whether you don't even play, whether you know you just know of Jin Kazama, let us know who your favorite Tekken character is. We're on Twitch, Streamcast TV, Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, 9 p.m. UK time. And our podcast is also available on all the audio-only platforms as well, such as Spotify. So you can also go on our website, thestreamcast.co.uk, to consume our podcast, live streams, videos, all that good stuff. We have some blogs there as well. If you want to know when our next event is coming, go to the website. That's where you can get all our information. If I forgot anything, too bad.
Them's the breaks.
That's how it goes. Thank you so much. I hope you enjoyed this episode. If you watch to the end, leave a comment on our YouTube comment section, #endgang. And until the next one, take care of yourselves and your loved ones. Stay safe. We'll see you on the next Streamcast.